You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that discusses developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. LawPod UK is produced by the barristers at One Crown Office Row and is presented by Rosalind English.
Welcome to part two of the Castle debate on the Environmental Governance and Principles Bill. In part one, we heard David Hart QC and Peter Kellett of the Environment Agency. This episode features Martin Baxter, Chief Policy Advisor of the Institute of Environmental Management and Assessment. And we'll also hear from Debbie Tripley, Legal Advisor to the Worldwide Fund for Nature UK. Martin Baxter considers that for all the weight of environmental regulation we've acquired from the EU, the 40,000 deaths from pollution, the decline of diversity and watercourses polluted from runoff, has shown this system to be inadequate. Reinventing the status quo is not going to be enough for a country with 10 million more people, creating untold pressures on the environment.
There is an opportunity now, which I would describe as an unfrozen moment, as the UK leaves the EU, to say, actually, we have the opportunity, and it is a very small window of opportunity, where many other things are possible in the way in which we manage and govern the environment in the UK. And so we got together to look at how we might create and map out a more ambitious future of environmental governance, and then from that, what would need to be in law, because it wouldn't happen, or it can only happen, if we put this framework in place as we leave the EU. I think one of the big questions is about what can actually happen at a UK level versus an England level. There is the opportunity that all UK environmental law, whether it is UK level or whether it is at devolved, so England, Wales, etc., to be developed in line with the environmental principles. I think putting the principles in UK law, particularly the integration principle, which basically requires the integration of environmental thinking into non-environmental policy making, is probably going to be the most important one, because that's what pushes it into transport, etc. And that will be a strengthening of what we already have. But building those principles at a UK level about how collectively UK environmental policy, wherever it is made, will be developed is important. And then accountability about how, in their own unique way, different parts of the UK might demonstrate how those objectives are being met. Of course, we also have some aspects of the environment which are shared. I think it's about half of the catchments in Wales are shared with England. So we have shared environmental resources which don't reflect national boundaries in the home nations. So we need a way of collaborating and cooperating about how we might manage and govern those. And of course, we also have the question of international environmental agreements and treaties, and how the UK we're going to transpose those and translate those into some sort of like meaningful structure to deliver against. So I think there are some aspects of this new bill which need to be at a UK level. In terms of then for England, I think there needs to be a defined process for defining overarching objectives, setting targets and milestones. I think what's been really positive about the Climate Change Act is that 5-yearly budgets. So the question is, are we able to frame the state of the environment that we want in 2025, 2030, 2035, in a way in which we can understand, so that makes a meaningful progress towards our long-term environmental future, so we know we're on the right track, and then a duty on government as a whole, not DEFRA on its own, to achieve those objectives. So how in combination are different parts of government going to come together to ensure that those objectives and the targets and milestones are actually met? There therefore needs to be a national sort of level plan of action to translate that into on-the-ground activity. And this is where I think this balance between where do we want to be long-term and not stifling the democratic decisions of people who will be voting in 2025, you know, it comes to effect, and actually you'll be choosing your governments in part about how they're going to come forward and the way in which they are going to meet these objectives. So that's their choice about how they do that. And I think that's quite important in terms of just setting that long-term direction, but giving an element of freedom for government of the day to be able to come forward with its proposals about how best to achieve where we need to be. And clearly we need to have independent advice and scrutiny, which is one of the roles, I think, for the new independent body potentially to play. I think this is really important. And this is probably where there's a bit of a difference between the processes that we have for the Climate Change Act in terms of 5-yearly budgets, etc., and actually what this means for the natural environment, because natural environment is to a large extent about place, and it's about people and communities and what happens on the ground. And at the moment, we have a pretty chaotic system of environmental plans and governance and environment in bits of other plans, which makes it really, really difficult to understand the state of the environment across different environmental media in any particular place. We don't know whether we are particularly improving or declining, and we don't really know where in the future the pressures are really going to be. So what we really need to do is to start to translate some of these long-term objectives into what are local priorities for protection and enhancement. I think enhancement is absolutely critical, because if the government's stated ambition of enhancing the environment over a generation is to be realised, then we actually have to not just slow down the degradation of our natural environment, but we need to get into restorative work and enhancement of our natural asset base. I think this is probably one of the most contentious parts of our proposals, is a duty of care for the environment. So at the moment, if you're a business, you can do anything to the environment unless there's a law or regulation that tells you otherwise. So we now have, you know, single-use plastic coffee cups, cotton buds. So we're going to start regulating at the product level all types of different impacts, but that's really inefficient. So if we could flip it over and say, actually, if you're an economic actor, you need to be able to demonstrate that you're taking environment responsibly in terms of your procurement and your supply chains, in terms of your direct operations, in terms of what happens to your products or your services going forward. The duty is on you to demonstrate that you're doing the right thing. I think that changes the dynamic in a way in which, for example, health and safety is done, where the 1974 Health and Safety Act, Health and Safety at Work Act, with the duty of care on people, has over time led to a huge increase or huge improvement in terms of worker deaths, worker health-related issues. It's not quite a straightforward read-off, but I think changing that dynamic that says you need to be able to demonstrate by default that environment is in the way in which you're operating. I think environmental net gain, so in the 25-year plan, environmental net gain for new developments, well, let's see what that actually means in practice, but I think that's really important for land use development activities and infrastructure. But also, I think we need to think more broadly than just having environmental net gain for new developments. On its own, that is not going to lead to overall net improvement of our environment. So there has to be something there for the way in which existing land managers might be improving their environment. Clearly, the Common Agricultural Policy and its transposition into UK law, you know, I don't see any chance whatsoever of there being 3.2 billion, which is currently paid to farmers in the UK, being the sort of money that is paid, but public money for public good and environment being a core part of that needs to feature really heavily. Then finally, this new independent body to advise and scrutinise on those plans, and that whole process of, are we going in the right direction? I agree with the comments from the previous two speakers. You know, where does this sit in terms of the powers and duties of this new body? From my perspective, see that ultimately government is responsible and accountable for the system of environmental governance. Therefore, it should be at government and minister level where there are deficiencies. For example, if the new body cared to look at the way in which enforcement was being applied between regulators, whether they're the arm's length national regulators or whether they are local authorities, are they being funded properly, etc., etc. Actually, that could be quite an interesting piece of work that the new independent body might want to look at, but it would be the system of enforcement and the resourcing of enforcement rather than individual decisions of enforcement that I think is where I would see that balance. So I think we have a great opportunity. Time is clearly ticking. We have the first part of, well, what I think will be the first part of the draft bill to arrive before Christmas, and then probably somewhere early in the new year, the second part, and then the draft bill will be out and we'll be able to look at that. I think this is an exciting time. I agree with Peter. If you are in environmental policy and environmental regulation, the opportunity to create something that could work really well and to set our ambition really high has to be where we focus our effort, not on recreating solely the status quo, given the environmental challenges that we currently face. Thank you.
So, a cautious note of enthusiasm there. Debbie Tripley speaks for environmental NGOs as a whole in a movement that was formed shortly after the Brexit referendum, Greener UK. Their concerns were that there would be nothing to replace the enforcement powers of the European Commission in terms of environmental regulation and standards.
With Brexit, there's a huge amount of uncertainty, as we all know, and every scenario actually leads to a great deal of concern from the environmental sector. And as a result, the sector you'll find on Greener UK's website have set out a set of what they call green benchmarks. And these are the tests that we're going to hold the government to. And there are four broad criteria, which I can summarise as: one, higher environmental standards must be secured. Two, there must be effective systems for enforcement. Three, there must be some cooperation with devolved. We're a united kingdom. We're not just England. As you've heard, the Environment Bill only speaks to England. So where does that leave a level playing field for Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland? And there must be something that deals with sustainable trade that minimises our global footprint. We still need a watchdog that actually has teeth, and the consultation, as you'll be aware, is, we think, very poor on that at the moment. We have a watchdog which is proposed, basically, that gives advisory opinions and has no way of legally enforcing that advice or legally enforcing or holding the government to account. So we want to see a very robust watchdog, and I'm going to say more about that in a while. We're also quite concerned about the way that the new legislation is coming onto the statute book. So if you look at the Fisheries Bill, if you look at the Agriculture Bill, there's quite a big power grab there with these Henry VIII clauses going on. Now, we do understand that the government's got a massive task. It's extraordinary times. They have to get all this legislation through. But at the end of it, when we're out the other side, what we're going to see is what we would normally think of laws being produced through primary legislation, more and more being pushed through by secondary legislation. And that's a big concern for the sector, because that means there's less opportunity to influence what that legislation might look like at the end of the day. So we don't want to see our environmental laws dumbed down, and for sure we've been promised by the government that there will be no dumbing down of what EU law gives us at the moment. So they've promised us equivalence, but equally, as we've heard, we want to see ambition. And the reason we want to see ambition is because of where nature is itself. And you forgive me if I spend a bit of time now just putting the bigger context of why it's so important to have ambition. I mean, why do we need new environmental law, you might be saying? You know, why do we need this legislation? Because we all thought that the EU legislation was doing quite a good job, and it was, and has been doing a very good job. But if you look at where nature is at the moment and how effective the implementation of those laws have been, you have to ask yourself, are we at the moment in the right place, or do we need to change the narrative? And we're going to hold the government to its promises. So the promises from the government, the two that stand out, is that they want world-leading piece of legislation. They want something that they can take to international conventions like the CBD and hold up as exemplary of the UK, just in the way that they have done with the Climate Change Act. So we're going to hold them to that promise. And they've also promised that they're going to leave the environment in a better state than they inherited it. So we want a duty in the bill that they will do that. We want to hold them legislatively, legally, to that promise. So Our ambition is for new laws that set that new environmental narrative. As you've heard, we don't think either it's any good to just keep on protecting the status quo, because it's not actually getting us where we need to be with nature itself. And where we need to be with nature itself, given that we live in one of the world's most depleted natural countries, we need to get to a place where we're restoring more nature. So I just want to spend, if you'll excuse me, a couple of minutes talking about what crisis nature is actually in, both here and globally. The standout headline here for me is look at fresh water, 81% decline since 1970. But they're all bad statistics. And just to give you some more really depressing statistics, we've got wildlife that's plummeted 60% over the past 50 years because of human interventions. And we've got estimates for plastics, which is, you know, our new environmental concern. They estimate now more plastic in the sea than fish by 2050. So just pause and imagine that. Imagine our children inheriting a world that looks like that. So our resources, our natural resources, are incredibly vulnerable at the moment from human intervention. And obviously not just globally, but also here in the UK. Our laws, both in terms of implementation and how they deal with nature, have got an awful lot of work to do. And this is an opportunity, when we talk about ambition, this is our opportunity to really look at what we're doing, how we're doing it, and what we need to do better. What we really want to see is an Environment Act that has that sort of ratcheting progression that's in the Climate Change Act. So what we really want is some objectives and targets that we see the government making progress towards as an outcome, and to which they can be held accountable to over a period of years, perhaps with 5-yearly milestones, checking in, seeing how we've made progress to actually improve nature. Our farmed land has to implement a lot of what this environmental bill is looking to do. If we don't have implementation and transformation of our environmental land management systems, we're not really ever going to get to nature's recovery. So I said that the last part of this I would spend a bit of time talking about the watchdog. Now, as part of Greener UK, you can imagine we have been advocating to the government quite a bit on all of these different aspects. And we've had quite a lot of discussion in terms of what the makeup, the governance framework should be for the watchdog and what powers it should have. And we feel that the government is listening. It's not entirely true. We've got a love-in with Gove, but we would say he's been certainly one of the most receptive Secretary of States we've had in a very long time on the environment. So we think they're listening to us, but we still think that there's quite a distance between what we see as green groups, the watchdogs should be doing, and what the government sees it should be doing. And I want to preface this by saying that we are in unique times, and this bill has to do something novel and unique. It's not good enough for the government to come back and say it's just going to be like all our other laws. Yes, we think this law has to be different because we're leaving the EU and we're losing such a lot in terms of the EU, and because of nature's critical situation, and because the government wants to be world leading, and because it's promised to leave the environment in a better state than it inherited it. And how is it going to do that if we just carry on with the status quo? So the watchdog plays a really important role in relation to that. And we think it does have to have powers that make it very similar to the EU Commission. I mean, the Commission has all those powers for reporting and investigating and surveillance, but critically in terms of its enforcement powers, it has the power to, well, first of all, it has the power to investigate a complaint, has the powers to mediate with government over what it thinks it should do to rectify breaches if it thinks that there's been a breach of environmental law. And if the government doesn't follow through, then it has the power to issue a reasoned opinion. That has a mandatoriness about it, which if governments then don't do what the Commission asks it to do, the Commission, with its decision on what it thinks is wrong, It then can go to the court and say, please uphold our decision on what we think is the breach. That's very different from judicial review. Very different indeed. And we think that if we're left with just a watchdog who can only enforce against a government's decision on a matter through the normal process of judicial review, i.e. whether it's exercised its discretion rationally or not on a matter, is very long way away from what the Commission does in terms of its powers. We don't want it to have the fate of Natural England with its budgets cut year on year, or the Royal Commission on Environmental Pollution, which just disappeared one day. We want to see all of those things with a watchdog, and if we don't see those things, we don't think that the government will be able to live up to its promises of being world-leading.
Debbie Tripley there with a strong steer for the government's environmental duties following Brexit. In the third and final episode from this session, you will hear Pam Castle taking questions from the floor, including a very interesting point involving a very large elephant in the room, human population.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and recommend us to a friend.